everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Chris Canty, filling in for the Hall of Famer Chris Carter, who is down in Atlanta for the Falcons-Saints game that he will be calling this weekend. This, of course, Nick Wright. We've got a great show for you today. Full weekend of football to preview. But where else could we start? Former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins the show. What up, Bart?
What up?
Man, you were up late last night. Are you just going to leave me right here because you got stuff in your hand?
Tell people why.
You were up late last night doing TV on the Jets
Looking
game.
At that bull crap.
Look at this. Oh, wow.
They got shiny suit man over here.
Well, I'm about to read the eulogy of Tyrod Taylor.
Wow.
He was a good man.
You can't do that to a former Raven.
He was a good man.
Come on,
son. You're killing me, Petey.
Starting off on the right foot. Hey, in years past, a Jets-Browns meeting wouldn't quite be a must-see. But last night's game ended up featuring two rookie quarterbacks who've been chosen to lead their respective franchises to the promised land. Earlier, we saw what Baker Mayfield did for the Browns. On the other side, Sam Darnold, not as great, completed less than half his passes, throwing two picks, no touchdowns in the loss to Cleveland. He was outplayed and said as much afterwards.
For me, from my point of view, I just got to play better. Simple as that. You know, not acceptable the way that I played tonight, and I know that, but also got to take it like a man. I feel like I'm, you know, responsible for, you know, some of the stagnant offense that we had. So, you know, I just got to play better. That's really it. Got to find completions and continue to do what I've been doing.
Let me just say that no rookie has had better postgame press conferences so far than Sam Darnold as far as honesty, telling it like it is, and taking it on the chin, taking it himself when he thinks it's his fault. But, Bart, do you think we overhyped Sam Darnold a little too soon?
Not at all. I think, you know, he says he has to perform better. I think the Jets have to do better. And when I'm talking about do better, I'm talking about play scheme, design. How many times can you throw a slip screen to Quincy Nuwa on third down and not think that Greg Williams is going to make the adjustment? It was no creativity, not finding a way to get Robbie Anderson the ball. He has to hold on to the football. The second week in a row, costly penalty. I thought that really turned the tides. Middleton dropped the interception in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And also just not being able to get off the field on third down and not really making the adjustment to when, you know, Baker Mayfield came in to what they were trying to do offensively. You know, continue to try to blitz. The guys were gassed because it was punt, 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 turnover, punt. And you're still trying to blitz, not really going into a zone. They're playing a soft zone, trying to make, you know, Darnold work the ball down the field. And we're going all out. Guys are gassed. And then now you're leaving your outside guys on an island.
Let's just call it what it is, Bart. The Jets took their foot off the gas. They went up 14-0, and that's exactly what was happening. Isaiah Crowell had all those celebration penalties, and you saw the guys, Tremaine Johnson, taunting some of the guys.
That was a big penalty.
That was a huge penalty.
That's a turnover. Tremaine Johnson penalty, I thought it was
a soft
penalty.
They were off the field. Yeah, I'm like, come on.
I mean, if people didn't see it, Crowell obviously, listen, Crowell, you're going to get a flag for that every time. He used the football's toilet paper and threw it into the crowd. That's going to get you a flag. But despite that penalty on the kickoff, the coverage team did a good job, but they held him inside the 25. So they were okay there. But then they get off the field. Tremaine Johnson picks up the ball because it was a drop.
And he was on his sideline.
And hands it, was it to Jarvis? I'm not sure who it was. But he puts it in his chest. I didn't think you had to give him a 15-yard penalty there, but that gave the Browns new life, which led to 3 points.
Go ahead. And then you talk about the Mo Claiborne penalties on the first touchdown drive that they had against when he was holding, I think it was Antonio Callaway. One was in the field on a third down, which allowed for a first down. The other one came on the first two-point try, which they failed, and then they came back with Philly special.
That was a joke, though, too. That wasn't – I mean, come on. The guy's out of the pocket buying time. The guy's running two or three routes. I don't believe that was a penalty.
You can't hold the guy. And it was clear that Mo Claiborne couldn't hold Antonio Callaway. That's the reality of it. But those two penalties ultimately ended up costing you. Now, the Jets defensively did everything that they needed to do at the beginning of that game. They even blocked a punt, which set it up a score. When they have those things rolling, this is a much better football team. But when you get into the position where you ask your young quarterback to be the difference in the outcome of the game, I think that's where the Jets got in trouble. It's what happened against the Miami Dolphins last week, and you saw more of the same in the last two quarters plus of football.
Look at that.
They played last night.
How many screen passes can you throw?
Well, if you're worried that you're going to throw interceptions throwing the ball downfield, that might be what you have to do. I am not going to overreact to this, but I'm not going to underreact to this. This is the second straight week that Sam Darnold has had critical turnovers. Week one, what?
There really wasn't his turn. He was trying to win the game late in the game. He's just trying to
throw the ball. Hold on. You're down four with all three timeouts and a minute 40 left. You do not have to force the ball into double coverage. Mm. He didn't see the guy there because the center got pushed into him. He made a bad decision. Last week, after they get a turnover, they're down 14 against Miami early second half. He throws an interception in the end zone.
That wasn't on him, though, Nick. That was on Terrell Pryor. The receiver's got to get his head around and catch the ball.
Okay.
The other turnover was on, the other pick was on him, but not that one.
Okay, so we can, the other way to say this is pick which picks are on him, because we got four in the last 2 weeks to choose from.
I gave him two.
Okay, well.
I mean, it's desperation time when you think.
Okay, you're right. This the one at the last play of the game, I don't care about it, because that was a situation where they had no timeouts. They only had, I think, 12 seconds. Yeah. I don't care about the one at the very end of the game. But the one, the Jets were not in great shape, but they were, you're down four. You have all three timeouts. You're driving. You're at, the 37-yard line? That's a terrible play. That's flatly a terrible play. Now, that doesn't mean he's not going to be a great player. But what it does mean is, like, you've got to own that. You said they were in a position where they're asking their young quarterback to go win them the game.
Yeah.
Well, that's the position Cleveland was in. They asked their young quarterback to come off the bench, down 14-0, go win them the game. And he
and they took the handcuffs off. Yeah, the handcuffs off.
But Nick, you're saying that, but through the same lens, you have to look at it like this. That Cleveland Browns defense was able to flip field position. The Jets defense did that at the beginning of the game. That game didn't tilt until you saw the Denzel Ward turnover, which led to a touchdown. So you got to remember, it's about the defense being able to set the young quarterback up to have success. That didn't happen for the Jets after the first quarter of football last
night. They didn't adjust when Baker Mayfield came in.
They didn't
do anything differently.
And what they decided to do is say, okay, we got Middleton here, we got linebackers here, we're going to work the seams. And instead, they're still blitzing off the edge like they had success early in the first quarter,
never
first half.
Anything.
And it never changed anything. And now you have Middleton running down the field up the seams with Landry. That was a huge play. Now they go empty, and they decide to put Avery Williamson on Duke Johnson, who's basically a receiver. They're sitting at the sticks on third. Well, CeCe's not here because he's always on sabbatical. I'm about to say, on third and 10, what do, Chris? You sit at the sticks. They're bailing in cover three, and they're just running to the sticks, picking up first downs. You know, I think they never made the adjustment. They ran out of gas, and they kept putting their corners on an island. You can't do that. You know, you can't expect guys to still have the same juice to be blitzing in the second half. And guys, Tremaine Johnson off the edge. First thing that happened, soon as the offensive lineman faced him, he put the brakes on. What does that do? That puts your guy on the island.
Well, here's what I'll say, Bart. If I'm Ty Bowles and Casey Rogers, I'm going to go after Baker Mayfield in the second half, because I realized at the end of the first half, when I didn't, he was picking my team apart with those throws. Pinpoint throws to Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, and again, another 16-yard completion to Jarvis Landry. There should have been a first down conversion on that third down before the field goal, but Antonio Callaway quit on the route, which was one of the incompletions that Baker Mayfield had. But I think they had to be more aggressive in that situation. It just didn't work out for them.
We can pick apart the Jets' defensive scheme. What's also true is, as you mentioned, they not only allowed just 21 points, but 7 of those points came on a super short field after the forced fumble. What's also true is this. They ran the ball for 107 yards. I thought Bilal Powell played well. I thought Crowell played all right. He had the touchdowns, but he wasn't very effective on a per-carry basis. What is the biggest reason the Jets lost that game? Their quarterback completed less than 50% of his passes, had no touchdowns, had two picks. Like, the biggest reason
Two picks is...
The
numbers
call
don't
it one
tell.
Pick.
Listen, at that point, the game was over.
The game was... down four with almost 2 minutes left and three timeouts, the game is not over.
Agreed.
There's a lot of things the game is. Over is not one of them. Like, so this is not a verdict on Sam Darnold's career. It's not a verdict on Sam Darnold next week. But what we know is this. Week one, Darnold played excellent, given how the game started. He was 16 of 20 from that point forward. He helped rally his team early, and then Matt Stafford really gave the game away. Last week, he was mediocre, and last night, he was bad.
He wasn't bad, man. This is an indictment on his receivers. Terrell Pryor didn't catch a pass to like, you know, to late in the game. Jermaine Kearse, I don't even know where he is. They're forcing the ball to Quincy Enunwa. How many screen passes, bubble screens on third down can you throw to Quincy Enunwa before you throw a slip screen where the receiver actually takes off and create a vertical threat? It was no adjustments at all. They can't find ways to get Robbie Anderson the ball. They either need to put him at a slot. I don't see any speedos over routes. He's a one-trick pony. They're just running him right up the field. For the second week in a row, he's had a costly turnover because he doesn't have ball security. Kearse isn't winning in the slot. The only one that's giving them any consistency is Quincy Enunwa. You can't continue going to him, and they need to consider putting him either at X or Z, putting him outside and putting Robbie Anderson on the bench.
It's a shame you don't know anything about the Jets. But that was a really good
killing
game.
Killing me,
team. It had been 635 long days since the Browns last won a game until last night against the Jets. With Baker Mayfield running the show, took over late in the first half after Tyrod Taylor left with a concussion, and he was great. Throwing for over 200 yards, completing 17 of his 23 passes, he led the Browns to a touchdown on the game-winning drive with just over 2 minutes left to go. A new era has begun in Cleveland. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, but wait, let's get ahead of ourselves. Here is Baker after the game.
You know, you got to feel the energy of the crowd, how badly they wanted it as well. You know, we got to play for each other, but at the same time, this city does deserve it. But we got to have that mindset of going to get it no matter what's happening. And so it felt great.
Once Baker got in the game at quarterback, you just saw a different rhythm, which was good to see. Obviously, young man did some really good things. You can't take that away from him. What a night for him. You know, obviously, he came off the bench, went in there and led this team and helped get this team to victory.
And he was so ready for this moment. He was prepared for this moment, you know, and he grabbed it by the horns.
I've just been waiting for my moment, been patient. You know, I've been in a good opportunity, put in a good situation with guys around me, veteran QBs and great coaches that I can learn from. You know, it was never whining or complaining about playing time, just, you know, want the team to win, and no matter what the cost is.
Clearly, Baker Mayfield excited, and clearly Hugh Jackson tempering his excitement because there are going to be a number of questions now, and we'll talk about that. But first, what did you make of Baker Mayfield's performance, Nick?
A star in the NFL is born. I mean, as simple as that. This is a guy who continues what has been a trajectory unlike almost any player in my memory. A walk-on at two schools who at his second school, his second last year, sets the all-time college football efficiency mark. The next year breaks his own mark en route to winning the Heisman. Goes number one despite being maybe 6 feet tall. And in his first action for a team that hadn't won in a couple years, not only leads them to victory, but they were down 14-0 when he comes into that football game. All of a sudden, passes that were being missed were not only pinpoint accuracy, but high velocity. Candy, we were talking before the show, he's 17 of 23, mm-hmm. but three of those were perfectly placed balls that were just flatly dropped by the New York Jets. Aside from one pass that he got away with in the back of the end zone, mm-hmm. I don't think he missed a throw the entire game. This is a Browns team that in the last decade was 1-39. When trailing by double digits at the half.
Wow.
And they won last night. This is a Browns team who I believe their season was on the brink. And you might say, wait, listen, they hadn't won a game. They went 0-16 last year. They already had a tie this year. Why would their season be on the brink? Because they could have won week one. They could have won week two. You could argue they should have won both of those games. And if you finally are a favorite for the first time since before you got your last win, and you lose to a Jets team that is not very good, and your quarterback situation is unsettled, it's very easy for even a team with a bunch of new guys to feel like, same old Browns, here we go again. He infused this team with swagger, and most importantly, mm-hmm. he infused this team with skill. And I watched Baker Mayfield, and I said, this is why this guy has exceeded all expectations at every level. He was great last night.
No, Baker Mayfield was outstanding, and there's no doubt that he gave this team a spark when they needed it. Being able to come in and work that two-minute drill the way that he did, marching down the field for five plays, 39 yards, and then ultimately culminating in that field goal to get some points on the board
yeah.
for the first half. But when you looked at that Browns offense, before the last possession that Tyrod was the quarterback, they had had a grand total of 2 first downs.
Yep.
So, I mean, they weren't moving the ball in the first half. They weren't consistent. But when Baker got in the game, he was outstanding, especially on third down passing. He was 5 for 7 for 55 yards, and he had 4 conversions. So, I mean, it was impressive to see his understanding of the concepts that Hugh Jackson was asking him to execute. He identified the coverages, seeing that the Jets were in single high and being able to attack the seams. That ball that he threw to Jarvis Landry when he just dunked on Middleton, the safety for the Jets, that was an outstanding placement of the football. You can't throw it any better than that. It was a great catch by
the one, the Jarvis right by the goal line.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
one,
the
I
one
think we're showing it right now, right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
seemed like it was an impossible catch, but also
that,
an impossible
that looks like
throw.
An NBA poster.
Yep.
Exactly. Jarvis Landry makes a great play, but, I mean, he put that ball only where his guy could get it. And that's the impressive thing about Baker Mayfield. And he had a perfectly placed fade route to Antonio Callaway. Callaway just dropped it. But, Nick, you mentioned it. You saw the velocity in his passes. It was a different ball that receivers had to catch versus what Tyrod had been doing for this team. So you can see why John Dorsey made the decision to draft Baker Mayfield. The physical talent is there, but now
right.
we're starting to see the actual production now that he's in the game.
You also can't ignore the fact that as soon as he came into that game, there was a shift in energy. You heard it from the crowd. You almost saw it from the other players. They were a little more focused. They were catching balls that were dropped earlier in the first half. You saw it in the results. Obviously, he was putting points on the board. But then you wonder, is that, you know, how much of that was just momentum? You have your new guy in, your heralded chief, and how much of that is like, this is something that's sustainable.
No,
this is something that can,
it
that
was,
can last.
It was that he's better.
Yes,
listen,
he's
I mean,
player.
He's flatly a better football player. Tyrod got a raw deal last year, and the people in Buffalo still seem to want to recreate the history of what happened last year. But Tyrod this year has been bad. He was awful in week one. Week two, he was better, but threw a brutal interception, and he got a little shine because of that big 4th-and-5 touchdown that they thought was going to be the game winner. And yesterday was the worst he had played. They could not move the football. Baker is a better football player than Tyrod Taylor. And the experience of, if we remember to the preseason, Tyrod in the game that I thought he broke his wrist, where it mm-hmm. looked like he had suffered a bad injury. Baker came in and didn't play very well in the moments he had, and then Tyrod came back. Baker said after the game, I wasn't ready to go in. It was coming in off the bench is a new experience for me in that regard. That experience did him well, I feel like,
yes.
in this game. Because
sure.
they might have made a change at halftime either way, mm-hmm. but he was ready to go on a moment's notice once Tyrod went in concussion protocol. And you mentioned it. Those 3 points before the half were huge. And to your point, Jenna, about the crowd, the beginning of this game, those Browns fans, it sounded like a playoff game. Those fans were as hyped for a Week 3 Thursday night game as I've ever heard
of the
crowd.
But that quickly dropped off.
It went away, then he reinvigorated them.
No, he did reinvigorate them. They scored on four of his first 5 possessions as the starting quarterback. But when I looked at last night's game, that was 2 teams that were trying to prove to themselves that they were who they thought they were coming into this season. What Todd Bowles has been saying to his team, what Hugh Jackson had been saying to his team, both franchises are trying to turn the page on losing seasons. And so I think when you looked at that game last night, it almost presented the perfect opportunity for Baker Mayfield to step in, because now you have a chance, if you're Hugh Jackson, to solidify him as your starting quarterback moving forward, because you have a long weekend. It's almost like a mini bye week, so you can
yep.
take advantage of that time. And then you've got the Oakland Raiders, who, oh, by the way, struggle to get to the quarterback, and it's a team that's still trying to find their way. So if you were going to pick a spot in your schedule where you would make Baker Mayfield the starting quarterback, this would be the time. I know John Dorsey and Hugh Jackson didn't want to play Bake the entire year, but you can't deny the talent that this guy has, and you saw how the team responded.
And a lot of Browns fans are probably asking, why not just start Baker from the start? If it was so clear that he was the better quarterback coming in, why wouldn't that have been
well,
the choice?
I don't know that he was the better quarterback for week one. I don't like it, right now it looks like that. I don't know how much he benefited from not having the expectations of being the week one starter. I don't know how much he benefited from watching NFL football on the sidelines for the first couple weeks. And we did not expect Tyrod Taylor, who as far as taking care of the football is one of the 3 best in NFL history. It's the one thing he does at an elite level, take care of the football. We didn't expect that he would have brutal turnovers in weeks 1 and 2, but Baker will be the starting quarterback moving forward. After the game, it seemed like the entire internet, Chris, was criticizing Hugh Jackson for not saying, yes, Baker's our starter. You can, even if he knows it, which he does, you can't do that to Tyrod. You can't while a guy
not
is,
in that moment.
No, can't. You can't have him find out while he's concussed via the media. Like, you just flatly can't. There's nothing to be gained by announcing it right there. The players know that when they play the Raiders, Baker's going to be the starter. Tyrod probably knows. But Hugh Jackson would have, I think, you tell me as a player, I think it would have, he would have been doing a disservice to Tyrod Taylor, who's handled everything like a professional, to announce it at the podium moments after the game.
Well, that's what it comes down to. There's a respect factor between Hugh Jackson and Tyrod Taylor. He's a veteran player, and so you have to offer the opportunity to at least have a sit-down and explain the situation and tell him at this point, with the franchise, it's best for the team if they go in the direction of the young quarterback, because Baker Mayfield just showed it on the field, and that's undeniable. The other 51 guys in the locker room, they know who the best quarterback on this sure. roster is. They know who the guy that gives them the best chance to win is. It's Baker Mayfield. And so eventually this was going to be his team, but because of the injury, Tyrod getting banged up last night,
it's sooner
than everybody expected.
And the other thing those guys know quickly here, that defense is very good.
Oh, yeah.
That defense is ready to win right now. And so if you get an infusion at the quarterback position, this Browns team, I know that most people are like, hey, they could win 4 or 5 games. I was out on a limb saying I think they can go 9-7. Well, they have a tie now, so that's messed up. But this is a Browns team that can compete with a good portion of the league because that defense is ball hawking, and all of a sudden they might have a plus player at quarterback.
Cleveland Browns get their first win. Let's call it a season and everybody go home. We'll start again next year. I feel like we're at the peak.
635 days, Jenna.
We're at the peak. 635
days.
We don't want to go anywhere but up. Back here, first things first, with Bart Scott. Carson Wentz returns to action this Sunday as the Eagles face Andrew Luck and the Colts. It'll be his first game action since tearing his ACL and LCL back in December of last season. Hey, speculate all you want about how he will move, look, throw, run, feel. All Carson knows is that he's expected to get out there and excited to play again.
I'm definitely going to cherish, you know, running out of that tunnel. I'm going to cherish the time just finally being back out there with the guys after missing these games and the long rehab, everything. You know, like you kind of said, there's going to be a lot of emotions going on. But once the game starts, it's just football again.
It is, Bart, but not for the Colts, because the Colts, will they change their defensive game plan at all, knowing exactly who they've got and what they think that Carson Wentz might or might not be able to do in his first game back?
Well, you're going to believe that it's not going to be a lot of RPOs. I don't think they'll put him at risk. If he is, you can assume that he's going to give it every time. I'm putting a bunch of people at his feet. I'm making sure I attack the A-gaps. When we see Deshaun Watson come back, when we saw Brady come back,
They
were afraid to put all that pressure on the front foot and leave it out there, you know, to follow through. I'm putting people at his feet all day long and see how confident he is in it.
Well, here's the thing. With Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson said that he's not going to handle him with kid gloves, that he's going to be aggressive with the offense. But we all know that Doug Peterson is going to call the game accordingly, because this is the franchise quarterback's first game back coming off of a multi-ligament injury. So I think you're going to see some of the same elements that we saw with Carson Wentz in that offense last year, but the whole playbook won't be open for Doug Peterson and that Eagles offense. That being said, I think that Carson Wentz poses a significantly more dangerous threat to the defense of the Colts than Nick Foles ever could. And I think that the defense will be called accordingly. So there are going to be more opportunities for that passing game to get on track. Even though they don't have Alshon Jeffrey and the full complement of their weapons, I still think that there are enough playmakers on this Eagles offense with Carson Wentz where they can be productive and have a big day.
Agreed, but I'm lighting him up, and I'm lighting him up early. And I'm going to see how confident he is and see if he's going to get on those edges, if he's going to dare to run with the ball. I'm leaving short edges. I want to see if he's going to expose himself. And if he exposes himself, I'm taking him out low.
When you say you're lighting him up, you mean from a defensive call standpoint or from the player standpoint? So you're sending more?
Well, both. I'm sending more than they can block. And I'm saying, okay, I may give up a couple of yards early in the game to send a message, to see if you can get up. See if you can handle people at your feet. If you run and you get out, I'm chopping your legs out. I'm going to make you be thinking about, okay, they're coming at my legs. That's just the nature of the beast.
I would be shocked if they run a single RPO where Wentz actually has the run option. Like, it might be the look, but the...
It'll be play action. It will be a play action and an RPO look.
I understand what Doug Peterson's saying, and I understand what the player is saying. That would be foolish. Like, it would be... We saw Aaron Rodgers in his game back last week. Now, it's a very different injury. I get it. He actually didn't miss any time. Rodgers had to run at some point, but none of it was designed. None of it was, hey, we want to get Aaron Rodgers out on the edge. It was out of necessity. The thing that Carson has going for him is even though this Colts defense up to this point this year, most notably because that rookie linebacker is playing so well, they are an improved defense. They don't have, to me, the personnel up front to, without sending extra people, get through that Eagles offensive line. Like, even as the Eagles have not been quite the Eagles so far this year, it hasn't been because their offensive or defensive line haven't been what we expected. So I don't think they can get pressure on Wentz the way the Vikings were able to on Rodgers. Like, the Vikings could just send four, and they could get home sometimes. I don't think the Colts, you're going to have a hard time for any defense doing that against the Eagles offensive line. The Colts front in particular, I just don't think has the personnel. So they are going to leave themselves exposed to the big plays. What the Colts have going for them and what hurts Carson in this game is those big plays, there's got to be someone on the other end of them. And when Mike Wallace done for the year, with Alshon Jeffrey injured, when your answer receiver is, let's bring back Jordan Matthews, that speaks to
Buffalo, by the way.
Oh, yeah, love Buffalo. Well, he expanded his family thanks to Buffalo. Like, you don't have as many big play threats down the field as you did last year when Wentz was playing.
No, but you'll still be able to move the ball. The guys that you do have, Aguilar, Ertz, and then Corey Clement, and then we'll see what happens with Jay Ajayi. You still have enough guys that can pose a threat to that Colts defense, especially if they get the one-on-one matchups that they're looking for. Now, one thing that's key to watching this ball game is how the game is actually going to be called from the Eagles side, because remember, the offensive coordinator last year with the Eagles, he's the head coach of the Colts right now. And then you look at John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach, he's in Minnesota. So how does that work in terms of the synergy between Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz in his first game back? That's something to keep an eye on. But again, I just think from top to bottom, this is just a much more talented Eagles roster. I don't think they're going to struggle with the Colts at home.
All that being said, and we can talk game plans and whatnot, as a player, take me inside Carson Wentz's mind right now. I mean, all eyes on him. This is a team that won a Super Bowl without him. Okay, he wants to pick up where he left off last year. He was on a phenomenal streak. How were you going to be able to tell by watching him if he's playing a little scared, if he's a little trepidatious?
It's going to be important for him to take a hit early on for him to know, okay, I'm back, the knee's okay. We remember Dante Culpepper when he looked at the knee and saying, I'm good. But it's going to be some hesitation. It's going to be some trust issues with that knee. You know, the good thing is he has Jason Peters on the left side of him that's going to protect his blind side, so he should see it coming. It's going to be important to see that he has early success. They're going to have to get him in a rhythm, come out in the script, get the ball out of his hands early, maybe put him on some design rollouts so he can see half of the rush, and make sure that they establish a run early and often.
The thing for me with Wentz that I am most interested in is, given what Andrew Luck has said recently about – Andrew Luck was saying all the types of things Carson Wentz is saying. Mm-hmm. And I think Coach Mangini brought this up yesterday. It was a great point. And then he actually played, and then he was honest. Like, it wasn't until he actually played, got hit, dealt with it, that he said, man, I was depressed. I was worried. Yeah. I didn't know. Now, Luck's situation was different because he was misdiagnosed, and it was lingering, and it was multi-years.
And it was his shoulder as opposed to a knee.
Of course. So, but the point that I'm making is, even though it's a different process, we're not going to know how confident Carson Wentz actually feels about his leg until after this football game. Yeah. Because he has to say right now, feel great, everything's great. And then once he gets hit and comes through the game, hopefully fully healthy, then we might get a better idea of how apprehensive he truly is. Because right now, he and the coaching staff are all going to say these things. But what we're not going to see, I would be shocked if we see, oh, man, it looks like it's week 15 of last year. Like, they picked up where he left off. And that would have been a question even if he didn't get hurt. Like, if Wentz never got hurt, one of the big questions coming into this year would have been, can Carson Wentz duplicate his wonderful year two season? You add the injury and the time off and the new offensive coordinator and new quarterbacks coach and new expectations. Like, all of that makes the degree of difficulty harder. It's one of the reasons why I think being at home against Indy is a good way for him to start off this year.
On Sunday, it's a great slate of NFL action, starting with the 49ers taking on Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs. Then it's America's Game of the Week as Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys battle Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. It is all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area.
And for people in New Orleans, Atlanta, or Sunday Ticket subscribers, Bart Scott was lying when he said Chris Carter's on sabbatical. He's in Atlanta calling that game, so check that out. He did a great job in week one. Great game. Should be some great commentary from
Falcons,
our guy, CeCe.
Saints. Tom Brady is 4-0 against the Lions in his career, outscoring Detroit 127-66. Now Brady's got a shiny new toy in Josh Gordon, who is trending towards playing on Sunday. Nick, what do you expect to see from Brady and Josh Gordon against the Lions defense?
Listen, I think Brady and the Pats offense is going to be effective against a Lions defense that has not yet found its footing. I don't think Josh Gordon's going to be a major part of that effectiveness. However, I do think he's going to play. I think he'll be active. I think he'll probably get 10 to 15 snaps. But I think anyone expecting a big game from Josh Gordon, that is underestimating how much work it takes to get familiar with any NFL offense, much less the Patriots offense.
Yeah, the Patriots passing game is predicated on having chemistry and then Tom Brady having a feel for how his receivers are going to maneuver within the coverages and being able to know where they're going to find the spots in the zones that are open. But in looking at this matchup, I expect that Bill Belichick is going to do what he does to all of his apprentices, which is school them, and that's exactly what's going to happen on Sunday night going up against Matt Patricia and the Lions. It's been defense optional for the Lions for the first 2 weeks. I don't see that changing in this matchup with the Pats.
Something to watch for Matt Patricia. Game one, hat backwards. Game two, hat forwards. Game three, maybe no hat. We'll see.
I was just thinking. I wonder what Matt Patricia's going to wear. Aaron Rodgers missed practice yesterday, but is expected to play Sunday against Washington. Keep in mind, he missed practice last week, played well against the Vikings. Nick, what do you expect from Rodgers in this matchup with Washington?
I expect Rodgers to look good. I thought he played, even though they were not good in the red zone against Minnesota. That's why they didn't win in addition to that late call on Clay Matthews. But aside from that, that offense moved the football against a great defense. Washington's got, a good defense, actually, but not the Minnesota Vikings. They have a good front, certainly not the Minnesota Vikings front. So I think Rodgers will be even more effective than he was last week, and last week he was very effective.
Yeah, and then another week removed from that sprained knee, we'll see how that progresses, see if it starts to feel better. He hadn't been practicing all week, so hopefully he starts to turn the corner with that injury. Now, I know he's questioning whether or not he's going to make it worse, but after you get away from that injury, the more time you have, the better it's going to be. So I expect to see Aaron Rodgers get better as the season progresses.
One quick note, Washington's top four in the NFL in percentage of times they've been blitzing. Blitzing Aaron Rodgers, even a hampered Aaron Rodgers, has never been an effective strategy. I think it was 9 of 9 against the Vikings blitz last week.
All right, moving on to America's Game of the Week, Cowboys and Seahawks. Not quite the start either team wanted. Dallas hoping to ride their momentum after beating the Giants last week. Seattle, they're just trying to avoid going 0-3 to start the season. Nick, how well do the Cowboys match up against the
Seahawks? From a defensive perspective, the Cowboys are going to match up very well against most teams, particularly teams with a weak offensive line. I think the one question mark in the Cowboys' defense, even though they've played well up to this point, is their secondary. But Seattle's got nobody that scares you in the second as far as receivers.
Yep.
You mentioned Russell's favorite target this year has been Walt Disley, a rookie tight end.
Walt Disney.
No, not
what
Disney. I said Disley, but my apologies. Will Disley, W. Disley, the famous W. Disley.
Mickey Mouse will be guarding.
The point is that the Seattle does not scare you offensively.
Yep.
My question for the Cowboys is, can they get any big plays? One play this year of greater than 20 yards. If Zeke starts to be more effective, maybe that opens up the play action pass for some of those big plays.
Well, here's the thing. I think the Dallas Cowboys offensively look to take a shot early like they did against the Giants on Sunday night. See if you can get the game to tilt in your favor, because you recognize the strength of that Dallas Cowboys team is not the offensive line right now in the running game. It's the defensive line and those guys getting after the quarterback. If you can get a lead early and then rely on that offense to be able to control time of possession, you're going to force the Seattle Seahawks to do exactly what they don't want to do, which is drop back 35 to 40 times. You see how that offensive line has protected Russell Wilson. 12 sacks in the first two games. That's unacceptable.
Jimmy G and the 49ers head to Kansas City. They'll face Pat Mahomes and the Red Hot Chiefs. Mahomes has thrown 10 touchdowns this year. Not bad for two games. Nick, do the Chiefs keep rolling against the 49ers?
Absolutely. I didn't pick the Chiefs last week. I thought they were not going to be able to. I thought they'd need 40 to beat the Steelers. They did need 40 to beat the Steelers. They just got it. The Niners do not have the weaponry to keep up with the Kansas City Chiefs, and I don't think the Niners are going to be able to take advantage of a porous Chiefs defense. Jimmy G has the second highest interception rate of any quarterback in the league. Pat Mahomes, of course, has yet to throw an interception. I think this is a mismatch. And first game Pat Mahomes will have ever played in Arrowhead. Week 17 last year was on the road. First 2 weeks this year on the road.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough environment for that 49ers offense. That offensive line is loud in Chiefs Kingdom. So this will be their first home game. They'll be fired up. But, Nick, you talked about the 49ers not having the weapons to be able to match up with the Kansas City Chiefs. Very few teams do have the weapons to be able to match up with the Chiefs' offense. They're that talented, and I look for them to continue to roll. If Pat Mahomes can continue to be as accurate as he's been with the football through the first 2 weeks, I mean, this is going to be tough to match points with this group.
These last two teams you talked about, Dallas and San Francisco, surprised neither of them trumped the Pats' offer for Josh Gordon because they need downfield playmakers to take a flyer on him.
All right, let's end with the Battle of Los Angeles. The Chargers come in averaging 445 yards per game, third in the NFL. They will look to keep up with the Rams' high-powered offense that has them off to a 2-0 start. But Rams' second-year head coach Sean McVay isn't impressed just yet.
You ask people, you know, how many teams were 2-0 last year, nobody could tell you because it's not important because it doesn't matter right now. What's important is that we've got to get better every single day. We've got to do a great job of getting ready for an excellent football team. And while I think there is a confidence and a belief and an expectation in terms of what guys think they're capable of doing, that humility that we talk about where they understand they got to earn it every single day in order to put themselves in a position to play to the best of their ability against an excellent team on Sunday at 1 o'clock.
All right, Chris, if the Rams want to jump out to an early 3-0 lead this season, what will they need to do against the Chargers?
I think they're going to have to continue to do what they've been doing in the Todd Gurley era with Jared Goff, and that's run the football. Todd Gurley is the focal point of that offense, so I think it has to start there. That's how you set up opportunities for Jared Goff in the passing game. I like the complement of receivers that they have between Kupp, Woods, and Cooks. I think that's a good group, but it has to start with Todd Gurley being able to get those touches to create opportunities for everybody else. That Chargers team is not a bad football team.
No.
It's not a bad football team. And I think that even though they're shorthanded on the defensive side of the ball, they do have some talented playmakers. Derwin James, I think, is key
He's
amongst
been
them.
Excellent.
He's outstanding. I mean, from a talent perspective, I mean, he's right up there with the likes of guys like Sean Taylor. I mean, he's that good. He's a special talent. But I think for this Rams offense, if they want to make sure that they can have success, it's got to start by being able to run the football.
All right, so oddly enough, last week, Arizona, who got blown out by the Rams, blanked by them, they held Todd Gurley in check, relatively speaking. If you're a fantasy player, you might be like, no, they didn't. He had like 25 points. Well, he had three touchdowns, but only had 40 yards rushing. Now, to the expense of that was big plays down the field. We have seen Brandon Cooks has been an excellent addition. So I do think that you have to pick your poison with the Rams. This is why right now they're the best team in the league. What are you going to stop? Okay, you want to focus on the outside threats. You mentioned Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and Brandon Cooks. No problem. We got the best running back in the league, arguably. We will eat you up behind Andrew Whitworth and a pretty damn good offensive line. Mm-hmm. You want to focus on Gurley? No problem. We will eat you up with Brandon Cooks going deep, Cooper Kupp going over the middle, and Robert Woods intermediate routes. Like, this is a pick-your-poison team. This is a team, there's a reason why, since the end of the first half of week one, they've played six quarters of football. They've outscored their opponents 57-0. So let's focus on the to nothing side of that, the Rams defense, because that's where the Chargers are going to have to win. If the Chargers are going to compete in this game, potentially win this game, it's going to be because Phillip Rivers, who quietly this year.
Outstanding. He's outstanding
he's been
this
great.
Year.
Great. He's completing almost 75% of his passes, mm-hmm. has a passer rating of about 120,
yeah.
which is basically make believe. Like
six touchdowns to one interception.
He's been yeah. great. And so that's the way they are going to have to try to beat the Rams. I do not think, as good as Derwin James is and as good as Melvin Ingram is, they don't have Joey Bosa, obviously, and I don't think they're going to be able to hold the Rams under 24 points, right? Like, I would say if you hold the Rams to 24-27 right now, you probably feel decent about it.
Mm-hmm.
The Chargers are going to have to score with the Rams in this game, and I don't know what the Chargers are because they ran into the Kansas City Chiefs in week one, and the Chiefs offense right now is moving it on everyone.
Yeah.
Week two, they played the worst team in the league in Buffalo. Now they play the best team in the league in Los Angeles. So it's hard to get a real gauge on how good are the Chargers.
All right, let's move on to the Giants and the Texans. Both had high expectations this season. Giants and their shiny new offensive weapons. Texans getting Deshaun Watson back to go with those incredibly potent defensive weapons. And yet, both teams 0-2. Both teams struggling to get going. They will face each other this Sunday in your classic Week 3 must win. Odell Beckham knows the stakes facing him in Houston.
0-2 now, so it's just like we gotta win. But it's not like the whole season's over if you don't. It's just you want to win games. So we game planning. We got some good stuff in, and we got to come up with a victory.
All right, Nick, the one stat that you always talk about, if you start a season 0-2, you got a 10% chance. Is that what it is of making
thereabouts,
the playoffs?
Yep.
What about 0-3?
Well, nobody's done it in 20 years.
Exactly.
So, listen, my pal Odell, he's lying there. He knows he's lying there when he's like, it's not like our season's over. He has to say that because he knows they could lose. Mm-hmm. And you never want to say a game, if we don't win this game, our season's over, unless it's an elimination game where your season's actually over, because you got another 13 games to play and you don't want people to be able to say, well, what are you guys playing for at this point? But this is a, to use a wrestling term, this is a loser leaves town match.
Yeah.
The loser of this football game, whatever expectations their fan base had for the year, you have to change them. Whatever.
Yeah, they can go ahead and schedule when they're going to have their car shipped back home. The loser of this game. That's exactly what it is. It's a wrap after this. Your season is going to end on the last day of the regular season.
And this is the only game that is like that in the NFL this week. This is the only game between 0-2 teams. And you've got two teams that right now both have to feel like, man, we shouldn't be 0-2.
Right.
The Texans lost a game to Blaine Gabbert. That should never happen at any level, at any point in time since he's been in the league. And the Giants got to look at him and be like, man, we had our opportunities. Week one against Jacksonville, Blake turns the ball over. The team had been 2-18 in their last 20 games when Blake throws a pick. We can't take advantage. Week two against the Cowboys. Cowboys offense made one play, and we couldn't match that.
Mm-hmm.
But none of it matters when you're 0-2. What matters is how do you get that first win? And if you're right now the New York Giants, I think their defense can be fine. The question is, can their offense move the ball at all? I know the offensive line's bad, but Eli's got to find a way to get the ball in effective positions in his playmakers' hands. Now, part of that is on Pat Shurmur and the offensive staff to scheme those guys to where you can't have Saquon Barkley have 14 catches for 80 yards. Like, that can't happen. You can't just be dinking and dunking every play. But the Texans' defense can get got. And I want to see if the Giants can do it.
Well, yeah, and that's the big thing, right? To see if the Giants' offensive line can hold up just enough for Eli Manning to be able to push the ball down the field. But, Nick, you mentioned it. When you looked at that Dallas Cowboys game against the Giants, the Cowboys, they played top-down coverage. They were content with allowing Eli Manning to have checkdowns and saying that you're going to have to throw 10 of those in order to score a touchdown. And the Giants weren't able to consistently put together drives because Eli Manning wasn't kept upright. He wasn't kept clean by his O-line. But both of these offensive lines are awful. I mean, these two quarterbacks are at the top of the league in pass attempts when pressured.
Yep.
Deshaun Watson is one. Eli Manning is four. So ultimately, it becomes a matter of which quarterback is equipped to deal with their offensive line not being able to hold up in protection. And the answer to that is Deshaun Watson. I do think the Texans have significantly more pressure on them coming into this game just because of where Bill O'Brien is with this franchise. It's about time for him to start doing some winning down there.
Here's the only thing. I totally agree with you in theory, and I'm very critical of Bill O'Brien. The Texans, I think, foolishly gave him a long-term extension this offseason. And so he has the job security, even if his performance has not warranted it. The other thing for the Giants in this game, this year, in the first half, they have 6 points and 175 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the second half, their offense has at least had a pulse. Typically, they have been trailing in those second halves. They've got to get off. I mean, you don't have a first half touchdown this season. You're averaging less than 90 yards in each first half so far. Every major statistical category offensively, Giants are bottom five in the league.
Yeah.
Like, you can't win that way. And I heard Odell this week say, well, there's no reason we can't score 35 points per game. With respect to Odell, they haven't scored 30 points in a game.
In 34 games.
in 34 football games. That's how long it was. The Browns' winless streak is the Giants' non-30-point streak. Like, that's where they've been at.
And this isn't a team where they're like, yeah, their offense will be pretty good. We'll see what, you know, we'll see what he like. This is a team that spent their second overall pick on a running back. This is a team that paid Odell Beckham Jr., probably one of the arguably the best wide receiver, if not up the top three in the league, paid him a ton of money. Like, they've got the weapons. I know their offensive line isn't great, but the Texans' offensive line isn't great either. This is the week where they have to show Giants fans what they can do with those
weapons. Well, they retool with a quarterback that's not mobile. So, I mean, Deshaun Watson has the tools to deal with a bad offensive line. Eli Manning never was a mobile quarterback, so you realize that you had to protect him. They tried to rebuild the offensive line this offseason, but the makeover didn't go according to plan. Pat Shurmur did it a couple of years ago with the Minnesota Vikings, and you saw how that worked out for them last season. I thought the Giants probably were trying to go in the direction of what Shurmur did in Minnesota. It just hasn't worked out because Nate Solder is not one of the best left tackles in the league, but they're paying him like it. Will Hernandez is still a rookie. And Eric Flowers, even though they moved him from left tackle to right tackle, he's still a turnstile. So that's the reality. The offensive line is bad, and when you start talking about trying to design schemes for your offense to be effective, it's no easy answer when your offensive line can't line up and block anybody, not just in the passing game, but in the running game as well.
And Saquon had the flash play in week one against Jacksonville. That is one thing that could help the offensive line, that could help Eli, is if Saquon can have an effective, not just the first game's 18 for 106, but there's different ways to get to that 106. He got there with the one giant play. If he can have a game where you give him the ball 15 to 18 times, he's getting you 5-plus yards per carry. That's going to open things up for Eli. It's going to make it harder for the defense to bring just a consistent pass rush on him.
Yeah, you got to have balance on offense, and he needs to understand the value of a 4-yard run. Been hitting the backfield a lot of time because of the offensive line, but it also can't be that stutter steps. He's got to be more decisive in the run game so you can give Eli Manning some balance, because without it, your offense is not going to be able to consistently move the ball.
In the Giants' favor, this is without question the weakest defense they've played. Jacksonville's excellent. Dallas's front is excellent. Mm-hmm. Houston theoretically is supposed to have an excellent front. They haven't shown it, and J.J. Watt is not J.J. Watt anymore. The back is still the back. And so this would be their best opportunity to make some moves on offense.
Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking best tailgates. Vote on Twitter or Instagram with the hashtag FanIndex plus the hashtag for your school, and you can learn more at collegefootballfanindex.com. So far, Clemson is leading this week. All right, guys, how great is a good one? Good old college football tailgate.
The best college football tailgate I've ever been to was in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Mm. Arkansas Razorbacks. Yeah. Amazing food, amazing crowd. I'm surprised to not see the SEC more represented here. Florida's there. None of the Texas schools in the Big 12 are represented, and not many SEC schools. Canny, I know at UVA you guys don't do tailgate.
No, you're too busy studying
and stuff like that. So I'm just, I understand. You guys are a thinking man's
It's
school.
More of the wine and cheese crowd.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Do you have a favorite?
No, I don't have
tailgate?
A favorite, but the people at Death Valley, otherwise known as Memorial Stadium in Clemson, they always seem like they're having a good time. Every game that I've played down there, you go in there and everybody is having a blast. So, yeah, it's appropriate that they're at the top of this list.
I feel like LSU could make a late push on this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they usually have their games at night, so they have all day to get it cracking.
All day to get it going. Absolutely.
All day.
All right, we'll get to the Antonio Brown controversy in just a second, but first, this is Temple's Rock Ya-Sin with an insane interception.
Wait, I thought this was going to be one of those catches off a guy's head. Oh, that's a hell of a play.
Wow, that is outstanding.
A little Thursday night college football action while all of us were watching Baker. Rock Ya-Sin out there making plays.
All right, speaking of, the Baker Mayfield and Jarvis Landry connection on full display last night. What a catch.
That's unbelievable.
Perfectly thrown ball, too.
That is unbelievable. I mean, that's an alley-oop, NBA, getting dunked on poster. That's exactly what that is. That's outstanding by Juice Landry.
Took it right off the defender's head, essentially, is where it was going. It's another one of these plays that we've shown in these butt first highlights with almost perfect coverage.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a bad play by the defender.
Hold on, the connection didn't stop there. This time, Jarvis Landry connects with, wait for it, Baker Mayfield with a 2-point conversion.
So Baker Mayfield has a catch, in his first meaningful game as a quarterback in the NFL, and in his last collegiate game, the Rose Bowl, he also had a catch. So,
oh, how about that?
Baker Mayfield going back-to-back in real games with catches.
Baker Mayfield already better than Tom Brady at least catching
there.
The football.
You had to take it there, huh?
Well, listen, facts are facts, Canny. That's what we do on this show. We spit facts.
All right, I hear you.
Most of the time, like 4 out of the 5 days. Mm. Hey, in case you missed any of the drama in Pittsburgh this week, allow me to fill you in. Antonio Brown tweeted, trade me. Then he didn't show up to practice Monday. Then he got disciplined. Le'Veon Bell still isn't there. And fans in Pittsburgh are frustrated with head coach Mike Tomlin. Now you are officially caught up. Needless to say, frustrating times for the Steelers. Just ask Antonio Brown.
But obviously, I don't want to be traded. You know, I'm still grateful to put on my uniform, grateful to be a part of this organization. You know, I don't take that for granted. Are we losing the game? Are we getting beat by 40? We haven't won a game yet. For me, as a Steeler, that's unacceptable. You know, I'm not on the sideline begging for the ball or making statements like you guys make. I'm pissed off. We losing. We suck.
You just tied the game. James Conner just tied the game.
Now, you guys make assumptions about my emotion. You guys don't know me at all. You guys just write what you think gonna get hits. Between me and you, everyone in locker know what I stand for, know what I'm about. You know, I'm committed to this program, this organization. I'm fully here. I go to work every day. I'm about my business, and I don't take it for granted. You know, my business is winning here. I come here to win. And to win, winning, you damn right I'm pissed off.
Antonio Brown had a lot to say yesterday. He spent 10 minutes talking to the media, which is a long time to give reporters. And look, there's still a lot of season left, but are you confident the Steelers can turn things around, Chris?
Well, first of all, I love Antonio Brown having that type of energy. I mean, I wish we could have played the whole 10 minutes that he spoke to the media yesterday. But in terms of all the questions surrounding him, I mean, he created this distraction when he missed the meeting on Monday. Like, that's just something that a veteran player getting paid when Antonio Brown is getting paid can't afford to do. It's a team that already had the distraction of Le'Veon Bell not being there at the start of the regular season. You don't need to add on to that. Now, in terms of his team not being bad, it's really not the offense that's bad. You're talking about the defense. It's one of the worst defenses in the National Football League in terms of touchdowns allowed through the air. They're dead last. In terms of running game, they're 30 out of 32. So the defense needs to come along for this Pittsburgh Steelers team. It's something that we thought would be improved with the draft capital that they put on that side of the ball the last few seasons, but it just hasn't worked out. And so that's one of those things that Mike Tomlin has to get fixed. But I will say this, with the distractions and all of the things going on with this football team, it makes it hard to address the X's and O's and going out there and executing on Sundays.
Listen, the defense, they missed Joe Hayden, but more importantly, they still have not figured out what to do since Ryan Shazier went down. This was one of the best defenses in the AFC until he got hurt. Since he got hurt, for the end of last year, the beginning of this year, they're allowing 28 points per game. That's second worst in the NFL. They're allowing 85% of their opponent's red zone drives to end in touchdowns. That's the worst in the NFL. You mentioned how bad the rush defense is, 30th out of 32 teams. Like, this is, the defense has been bad. I totally believe Antonio Brown is not on the sideline saying, give me the football. Mm-hmm. Last year, he had a moment where he thought he was open, he didn't get the ball, and he threw a cooler. And people, Antonio Brown is not only one of the best players in the league, one of the best leaders in the league, because he leads by example and by his play, his work ethic, his commitment to his body during and after the season. Now, you're right. He should have showed up to work on Monday.
Yep.
He took what I would call a mental health day, but you got to let people know you're taking one of those mental health days. And so that added to the controversy here. But can they turn it around? Of course. Like, they miss Le'Veon Bell. I understand James Conner has played well, and you're right that the offense has not been the problem. But against the Chiefs, Big Ben had to throw the ball 60 times. They maybe can have a better time of possession, give the defense a better shot if Le'Veon Bell is out there. In week one, James Conner, for as well as he did have a critical fumble late when they were up 14 points. They missed Le'Veon Bell, but last year, they not only got beat by the Bears, they then in week five got embarrassed by Jacksonville.
The first month, Le'Veon Bell wasn't even having a great season. He was a non-factor almost last year, and they were still able to
No, but they struggled last year.
They did,
beginning.
But they were able to get
afterwards.
Themselves back.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Le'Veon Bell is a special player, and so even if he's not being productive, him being out there on the field forces the defense to account for him. And so, yeah, Nick, when you have a defense that's struggling, as an offense, you realize how talented that you are, you've got to be able to try to control time of possession so your defense is not out there getting exposed as much as they have been over the course of the first 2 weeks of the season. But to your earlier point about Ryan Shazier, this is a team that can't control the middle of the football field. And if you can't control the middle of the football field, you are going to struggle. That's exactly what Tampa Bay has been doing the first 2 weeks of the season. For all of the hype that DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans are getting, it's really about Chris Godwin and O.J. Howard being productive in that middle of the field, providing easy completions for Ryan Fitzpatrick, which opens up things on the outside in one-on-one coverage. That's why this Bucs offense has been high-flying. This Pittsburgh Steelers defense has got to figure it out in a hurry because Monday night is fast approaching, and if they have been performing the same ways that they've been the first couple of weeks of the season, it could be another long night for that defense.
What do you think is the most important thing for this team to quickly turn things around? Obviously, they're not going to replace Shazier overnight, and you're not going to get Le'Veon Bell most likely Monday night.
Okay, well, you took both of my answers. I mean, what's the most important thing is they have now – I don't hold against them not being able to overcome Shazier's injury during the season last year. Not only was it a huge loss for them personnel-wise, but emotionally, I think seeing your leader on defense – having the question whether or not he can walk again, I would imagine that makes it harder to play pro football.
Yeah.
Makes it harder to go out there and stick your head in the way you're almost taught to metaphorically defensively. They have had an offseason to not only emotionally recover from that, but personnel-wise figure out how we are going to replace this great player. And the other thing is they do need Le'Veon Bell back. Mm-hmm. Like they since the big three, the triple Bs, whatever you want to call them, been together, when all three play, they're 41-19. When one of them is out, they're 15-13-1. Wow. They go from one of the best teams in the league to an average to below average team. They need Le'Veon Bell back, and that is a front office decision. Eyes wide open, they made the choice to not give him a legitimate long-term contract, knowing this was a possible repercussion.
Yep.
Now, I don't think they expected him to go as nuclear as he's gone,
right?
But that is his right. And so that is – Le'Veon Bell has the power in this situation. I didn't think he was going to give up $900,000 a week, but thus far he has. That doesn't look like it's going to change this weekend. So they're going to have to find a way Monday night likely to win without him.
They probably thought what happened last year was going to happen this year. He would hold out, eventually just join the team, sign his tender, and then play out with
– slight miscalculation by Kevin Colbert. Just a little outside.
All right, take a break. Coming up, can Russell Wilson save the Seahawks' season against the Dallas Cowboys? That's next. This is First Things First. We've got two huge college football games tomorrow on Fox. First, it's number 17 TCU taking on Texas. The number 18 Wisconsin battles Iowa in a Big Ten showdown, all on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Wisconsin needs a win after that awful loss to BYU. Texas can turn their season around.
That's a bad loss for the Big Ten. Bad loss.
Tough.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.